This is Living Planets. I'm Neil King. And before we say goodbye to 2025, we're going to revisit a few episodes from the year because there are some developments, you might even say some good news, that we'd like to share. And it's something that even our most devoted listeners might not be aware of. And joining me in the studio to tell us more is Living Planets Kathleen Schuster.
Hey, Neil.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. Ready for the end of the year.
Well, this is exciting, right? So we have some really good news. And yeah, maybe you want to share it?
Yeah. So for some of our listeners, just to get everybody up to speed, you know, every week on the show, we do a deep dive into a topic. And what we like to focus on is how climate change, nature, environment is intertwined with all of our lives. And so we go out and we look for stories that people have to share, something really interesting, and try to tell it in a way that's even, yeah, surprising for seasoned climate journalists, let's say. And the result has been overwhelmingly positive from you, our listeners. So thank you very much for that. But the other good news that we have is that we've won several awards for the podcast this year, which we're really excited about.
Yeah, and we really can say several, right? It was quite a list. Can you perhaps give us an idea? What are they?
So the first one was the Echoes of the Shores Award for our episode, What's Stealing the Light from Our Oceans? Then we got a Covering Climate Now 2025 award in the category of health for We Need to Talk About Farmers and Mental Health. And last but not least, a Signal Award, a Levies Award, and an AIB nomination for our five-part miniseries, The True Cost of Climate Change.
And there are even some nominations that are still outstanding where we don't know yet.
That's what I've been told.
It could be more even.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think, you know, it's only fair because the Living Planet team is obviously more than just you and me, even though we're hosting it most of the time together with Charlie. But I think it's only fair to hear from the producers themselves, right? Don't you think so? We thought we'd use this episode for that.
Yeah, there's a lot of work that goes into each episode and a lot of people that our listeners might not always hear on mic. So it'd be great to hear from them now.
The first award we want to highlight is for the episode What's Stealing the Light from Our Oceans? And here to talk more about that episode is the producer behind it, Jonas Meyer.
Hey, Neil. Hey, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing, Jonas? All good?
I'm fine, thanks. Also looking into the end of the year. I'm glad it's over, almost.
Was it that bad?
Well, a bit pessimistic, maybe.
No, I think we're all happy to start a new year, right? But anyway, okay. Jonas, you were awarded the Echoes of the Shores Award for your episode. Kathleen, can you perhaps fill us in on the organization behind that award?
Right. So it's given out by France's Coastal Protection Agency, which was pretty unexpected. I had never heard of this before, but looking into it was pretty cool. So France's Coastal Protection Agency celebrated their 50th anniversary this year. And part of what they wanted to do to mark the occasion was to honor journalism, which is not usually how a lot of organizations mark special anniversaries. But I thought that was really nice. And they wanted to focus primarily on journalism that was looking at coastal conservation efforts across different media. And yeah, that worked to our benefit because that included podcasts, specifically the episode that Jonas did.
Yeah, congratulations, Jonas. Can you perhaps tell us a bit more about the story that you were following for that episode?
Absolutely. So the story is about how parts of our oceans are becoming darker. We join researchers in Germany and Norway as they discover the darkening and as they try to understand where that darkening comes from and how it harms marine life, first of all, but then also human life along the coasts.
Aber das Wasser selbst hat sich natürlich nicht über die letzten 100 Jahre geändert.
The water itself obviously didn't change over the past 100 years. So it's the substances that got into the water, three of them, algae, dissolved matter, and sediments.
Dritter Faktor sind Sedimente.
So for this episode, I went to the Baltic Sea coast in Germany, including to a fisherman, Klaus Wollner, who's now catching less and less fish, partly because of the darkening. Also at the Baltic Sea coast, I met with one of the leading scientists in this field, Oliver Zielinski from a research institute at the Baltic Sea. And we also went out to the Baltic Sea ourselves to take a literal deep dive into the sea to see ourselves what the darkening looks like in the water. Because, I mean, it doesn't look like darkening, you know, at night, the water isn't black or gray or something, but brownish, greenish, yellowish. And that was really interesting to see firsthand what it looks like.
Jonas, what was the most fascinating aspect of the research for this episode?
So I'm not much of an ocean person, so it was new and exciting for me to actually go diving in the Baltic Sea, even though I have to say it was just 2 meters deep. So, I mean, some people might say that's not real diving, but it helped me to understand the problem and to actually see the problem, because otherwise it's literally hidden from our eyes, right? Because it's happening in the seas and not on land. And that's why it's so difficult to care about this darkening, and most likely also why no one or almost no one talks about it. So diving in the Baltic Sea was really crucial both for me and for the story. Another thing that was exciting was to look at the variety of tools to measure ocean darkening. So on the one hand, all the high-tech instruments from satellite images to autonomous underwater drones to kind of big, really expensive barrels that allow ocean researchers to recreate the ocean in their labs and what is happening in the oceans. And then on the other side, you have this really old thing called Sikhi desk, named after a 19th century priest from Italy.
Ich lasse jetzt die Sikhi-Scheibe runter ins Wasser.
I'm now lowering the disc into the water and watching it slowly drift down from the surface.
A disc about the size of a pizza plate that you let sink into the ocean on a cord, and then you write down when the plate is no longer visible.
Jetzt kann man ja sehen, dass die Sekscheibe immer schlechter zu sehen ist.
It is getting harder to see the disc now as the murky water covers it. The important thing is that I now figure out the exact depth at which I can hardly see the disc. If I lift it up a little now, I can see the disc again.
In this way, over more than 100 years, a big amount of data has been collected, and now it's just as important as all the high tech to figure out why the seas are getting darker. So that combination I found really interesting.
Have there been any updates since you reported on it?
Yes. So since my story came out, things have changed a little for better and for worse. Earlier this year, the University of Plymouth has published a study that for the first time looked at the global extent of ocean darkening. And what they found out is that 21% of the oceans are darker today than they were 20 years ago, which equals a land area the size of Asia and Africa combined. So really a huge area and a big chunk of global marine life that is affected by the darkening. So that's the bad news, obviously. A little good news is that there's now more coordinated research happening in the ocean darkening. You know, that study from the University of Plymouth, obviously part of it, but also 7 countries from Europe have teamed up to look deeper into what they call marine lightscapes. So both darkening, but then also light pollution in the seas, which might actually be a whole new topic for an episode.
Wow. And Jonas, this was actually the very first episode that you did for a podcast, right? Because you usually work more with video. So first time you filed something for Living Planet and it wins a prize, right? So how did you feel about that?
Yeah, it was my first prize even. So I'm really happy about that. And it really also was my first experience with podcast, as you said, Neil. Within our environment department at DW, I usually work with video for YouTube, for Instagram, for TikTok. So both longer and shorter videos, let's say between 40 seconds and about 15 minutes. And the most important part about doing video is to come up with video footage, pictures, animations, charts. And it's also the bottleneck of that work because it's time consuming and sometimes even impossible to find that footage because of copyrights, for example. And for audio, you don't have to worry about all of this. You create the images using sound. Mm. And so that was new for me and hugely exciting. And I look forward into doing more of this.
Yeah, there are just other copyrights issues there with music, but we get around those.
Yeah, but I also feel like any medium you work in, you start to get bogged down by whatever issues like copyright or, I don't know, looking for just the right image or just the right voice and that sort of thing. So it's when you said it was a little bit easier, I thought, well, wait a second. It's it really depends. But I get what you're saying.
What I'm also interested in, Jonas, as a winner of this prize, you're also entitled to go on a field trip with marine scientists, right? Have you heard any more on that, where that's going to be and when?
No, I haven't heard anything yet because I believe all the emails regarding that award end up in your mailbox, Neil. So I totally depend on what you forward to me. But it says it's some international research mission that I can join. So yeah, let's see what happens. And perhaps this will be another Living Planet episode then.
Absolutely. Is that something that you find daunting, going out on the high seas? Are you good with choppy seas?
Yeah, actually, now in December, I'll be going out to the North Sea with a ship, a mission to recover, to find and recover old munitions that were dumped into the sea after the Second World War. And, I mean, it's winter. It's the North Sea, which is very stormy anyway, even in summer. So this will be exciting. It's for video, unfortunately. So
okay.
Neil's making notes.
Will you be diving there too?
No. I won't be diving because this would be too risky. I mean, next to the munitions, next to all the cargo ships entering the Elbe towards Hamburg and so on, that would be a bit too much.
Well, that would be a viral video, sure.
What kind of insurance do we have to work? Wow, that's really fascinating. I can't wait to hear that, or watch that, rather.
Great. Well, congratulations again, Jonas. And if you want to check out this episode, you can scroll back through our podcast feed to the episode What's Stealing the Light from Our Oceans? And if you're curious about Jonas's work in general, go to DW's YouTube channel, Planet A. It has great videos on technical innovations and the environment. Thanks for joining us, Jonas.
Thanks, Neil, Kathleen. Happy New Year to you too and all of our listeners.
Thanks to you as well.
Thanks, Jonas. Okay, so now the next award was from the journalism organization Covering Climate Now for our episode We Need to Talk About Farmers and Mental Health, which was produced by you, Kathleen.
Surprise. Here I am. Yeah.
For listeners who are looking for more great stories, Covering Climate Now is a growing name on the environment scene. It was founded by the Columbia Journalism Review in 2019, along with the New York NPR affiliate WNYC. And the British newspaper The Guardian. And this was the fifth year Covering Climate Now awarded top-notch journalism. And Kathleen, you won in the category Health and Audio. Can you please remind us what was that story about?
Okay, so we have to think back a little bit in time because actually what was a bit odd about this particular award was we were allowed to nominate something that was from 2024. And so in 2024, there were a lot of farmers' protests going on in Europe. So you might remember the coverage of gigantic green tractors going down the streets of Berlin or Brussels. And what had happened at the time were there was like a culmination of stressors on the farming sector. So there was, you know, the effects of several years of dealing with extreme weather, farmers feeling the pinch of price competitions with retailers. And then on top of that, also like EU regulation that was aimed at mitigating climate change, but ended up just causing a lot of paperwork, you know, for people who don't exactly have a 9-to-5 job. So that in a nutshell what was going on. In Germany specifically, there was a lot of outrage over the fact that the German government wanted to cut diesel subsidies, which would have made farming even more expensive. And so against that backdrop, you and I were talking, it's like, okay, what can we do about this? Because by the time we're done with the story, the protests might be over. And and I happened to come across an article that mentioned something about an organization that was helping farmers with mental health struggles. And that's what kicked off just, falling down this rabbit hole of what's going on with farmers. And it turns out that across the EU, a lot of farmers are really struggling with mental health. And so that's what the episode ended up being about. Yeah, there was a lot to say.
23.4% of farmers were considered at risk for suicide.
27% burnout rate.
49% indicate their job gives them mental distress. The main stressor that we have identified.
First one was
agricultural politics.
Administration and regulation.
Government policies designed to reduce climate change.
Yeah, I also remember back then that, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I had the impression that this story weighed on you more than most. You were also, this was hard to digest for you on several levels, wasn't it?
Yeah, sometimes we do hear information in a background interview or an off-the-record chat that does weigh on you. And with this one, of course, you know, talking to people who, for example, like this pastor who I had been speaking with, who is from Bavaria, he's a farmer and a pastor, and he was being hit on all sides. He was experiencing as a farmer what it meant to have to upgrade his farm to comply with new climate regulation or with animal protection, for example. And, you know, whether he could afford it, whether his son could afford it. And then at the same time, in his work as a pastor, dealing with other farmers in his community, you know, and these people, their families have known each other for a very long time. These people who are having trouble financing their farms, struggling to do their daily work, and then also suicide being a factor in those communities, and trying to figure out, you know, how do we deal with this, but also how they felt quite scapegoated in the media by politicians, by climate activists.
Betriebe gibt es ja schon seit 10, 12, 15 Generationen.
Some of these farms have been around for 10, 12, 15 generations. So knowing that someone once started this farm and for the past 15 generations, each generation managed to keep things running. And now he's the one who's going to have to shut it down for good because it's no longer working. The pressure these people are facing is brutal.
Belastung, Druck.
And so it was hard to digest in so many ways because at the end of the day, these are the people who make sure that we have food on the table.
Mm. It also brought home to me just, you know, that story that, I mean, of course, the issue of profitability is one, but also just the issue of red tape, the amount of regulations and hoops that these farmers have to jump through to actually, you know, remain in business. And and that burden, it really brought it home to me just how many boxes they have to tick before they actually can bring in the harvest. So
quite literally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And also because a lot of farmers, well, this was what I heard from farmers in Germany, you know, they're not really able to afford farmhands anymore. Or just barely, you know, maybe they can pay somebody part time. So you have a lot of small farms with people who are employing themselves. Maybe they're employing a family member, but to get that extra help in is very difficult. And they're working all day long, literally all day long. And then on top of that, you know, for any of us who live in a country where we know bureaucracy, so if you're in an EU country, you definitely know something about bureaucracy, and thinking of the headache that that just causes if you have a full time job. But then farming is more than a full-time job. So, yeah, I hadn't thought about that either, but it's definitely a real stress factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's a really super relevant, interesting topic. It also is a topic that requires a lot of sensitivity in covering it, the mental health aspect about it. Mm. And because you're not going to blow your own trumpet, I am. That's what I'm here for. So I'm just going to quote what the judges had to say. I'm just have to read this off now. So, the judges said that Kathleen Schuster's reporting is sensitive and nuanced in its handling of difficult subject matter, which shows especially in the story's thoughtful interviews. Judges additionally applauded Schuster's focus on solutions, describing this not only as important, but helpful work.
It's very gratifying. but I mean, you know this profession too, where we work with so many people who do great work every day that goes kind of unacknowledged. So it's, yeah, it's nice when there is that moment where somebody says, oh, you did this well. It's like, thank you. I really put a lot of work into that.
Well, I keep telling you that.
Thanks. No, but I mean, but you know what it's like. It's, we have to put so much care and thought into all of our interviews. But especially on this show, you know, we've really been trying to go more into people's personal stories and trying to draw out how the world we're living in and our relationship with the environment and what's going on with the environment is deeply intertwined with people's lives any way you slice it. And to be able to talk to people about stuff like that, I mean, it's very invasive what we're doing. I mean, it's not just like having a nosy personality. It's like you're really calling up people and asking them to really talk about something that might be quite personal. And that's not an easy thing to do. And I think especially with this one, the task was daunting because, you know, the whole story is there are men who have problems talking about their mental health. So I have to call these people up and say, could we talk about your mental health? I'm not a mental health professional. I don't know these people. You know, so that was kind of that was interesting. Mm. But I mean, you know, this effect as well when you're working on a story, something that's really going on in people's lives, you can really tell you've got a story when they want to tell you. They really have a lot to say. And that was the case with this one. And it was also the case I reached out to ask if there were any updates, and I got a few emails.
Yeah. Has the situation improved? Has it worsened for them?
Well, unfortunately, it hasn't improved. There is some good news, but I'll start with the bad news. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the bad news is I did get in touch with that pastor that I was just talking about, Jürgen Dornhauser. And he said, yeah, the situation has not gotten any better because they're dealing with for example, the fact that the current German government is looking to save money in many places. There's a huge budget deficit right now in the government. And one of the things that happened this past fall was that they cut the subsidies for some of the animal protection issues that they had raised in the previous government. I'm not sure which government it goes back to, but anyway, they needed to save
money. We've had a few in recent years.
Probably, yeah. But they had to cut some of the subsidies that were affecting him, for example, with keeping pigs. And the money is now supposed to come from somewhere else. But what came through in the email was this feeling of like this back and forth, this uncertainty, this never-ending bureaucracy is a huge strain. You know, will the money come through from somewhere else? Or are people going to have to shut down parts of their farm because they're not compliant with regulation? Another thing he brought up, which I actually wasn't aware of, was this year was like Germany's, wait for it, best potato crop in 25 years. Yeah.
It was.
But that means the market is glutted.
So the prices. Yeah, potatoes, right?
Exactly. So the prices have fallen and they're continuing to import potatoes from other countries. You know, it's just this feeling of like, ugh, we can't win. Yeah. And yeah, the suicide issue is still one that is a problem in the community of, you know, having to help people who are suicidal. I'll just leave it at that. But there is some good news. I would like to end it on a positive note, which was when I reached out to Lise Mesley, who works for the Flanders Research Institute for Agriculture. So that's in Belgium, the region that speaks Flemish. She was one of the ones who had done some of the first research on farmers and mental health. And she got back and was very excited about this news because there is now an EU policy brief that's been put forward recommending a huge push to address the mental health crisis among farmers. And that happened in November. And yeah, that came from an organization called Safe Habitus, which is part of this larger research and innovation funding from the EU called Horizon Europe. So Horizon Europe and Safe Habitus were kind of behind this. And also two MEPs, so two members of the European Parliament, are pushing for this. And some of their recommendations, well, actually all of their recommendations, go in line with what these experts have been saying, but a lot of what was touched on in those episodes. So, you know, there needs to be more support. There needs to be much less paperwork, much less of an administrative burden on people. And despite all of these problems, that doesn't mean that the EU is off the hook for mitigating climate change. So it's still the catch-22. How do you regulate without burdening people? But they've acknowledged these things. So we'll see what happens with it. But that was quite exciting to hear that there are people who are really working on this on a day-to-day basis and care very, very much.
And they've firmly put it on the radar now of MEPs, which is great.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. But that was really nice to hear. Yeah.
Well, Kathleen, congratulations once again. Well done. Well deserved. And yeah, we'll be right back after a short break.
It's tough being German. People think I'm punctual, but I'm often late. Let's do a quick check of stereotypes. When you think of Germany, you think of extreme punctuality, perfect planning, high-tech and efficiency. Well, think again. Welcome to Delayland, a podcast about a country that needs your help. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Regular listeners will recognize your voice, but do you want to introduce yourself again just briefly, Charlie?
Yes. Hello. I'm Charlie Shield. I'm a reporter, producer and co-host of Living Planet.
Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Kathleen.
Charlie, you co-produced a five-part miniseries last spring called The Real Cost of Climate Change, along with our colleague Sam Baker, who unfortunately can't be here today. And it's been quite a year in terms of awards, hasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. We've been pleased with the reaction. We've got a Silver Signal Award and a Bronze Lovey Award and quite a few nominations. There's actually another announcement coming this afternoon. So yeah, it's been really nice. It's nice to get the recognition.
And also one episode that you had worked on was What the Economy Gets Wrong About Nature. That was a finalist for an AIB Award, right? Which recognizes excellence in international reporting. Very prestigious. So on the whole, I mean, you really struck a nerve with this topic, right? I mean, were you surprised by just how big an impact this has had?
Yeah, I think so. I guess you just sort of focus on the work in front of you and don't really think about those kind of things. But yeah, it's really nice that it's really resonated with people. I mean, for me, the awards, you know, that's always really nice, but it's actually much nicer to hear sort of listeners, what they think, and also the people who featured in the stories, how they react to having their story shared. And that's been really cool as well.
Because one of the tricky things was also you had a lot of economics in this series as well, right? Because you kind of merged environment and a bit of business reporting and broke it down. I mean, there were lots of interesting, fascinating facts there. I think anybody who listens to the series can take a lot away and learn a lot about just how important the environment is also to our economies. But just do you think maybe that was also a recipe for success, merging those two, which often aren't merged, you know, business and environment?
Yeah, maybe even though it is so relevant to our lives in so many facets, still people can struggle to make the link between how does this supposedly abstract concept of climate change impact my daily life? So we wanted to make those links a little bit clearer. And we got a thumbs up. We got the seal of approval from a climate economist and an ecological economist on the series. So that was relieving.
Wow.
Yeah, I saw that you guys had also gotten some attention on the London School of Economics webpage where they shared your mini-series, which is always great. And I mean, it's not uncommon for the press department or communications team from interviewees to do that. But yeah, that's quite impressive then to be on the website of that very prestigious university.
That's like a knighthood.
Oh, that's basically, yeah, it's basically the same thing.
That's really cool. I didn't know that, actually.
Oh, well, another surprise. Wow. Yeah.
Charlie, what other feedback and reactions have you had to the series? Perhaps also, you know, from friends and family.
Yeah, well, my friend was telling me the other day, actually, that she was recently on a trip driving through Germany with her mum, and they decided to listen to the whole series, and they got really into it and really loved it. And I thought, like, that was really cool that this mother-daughter duo was listening to the series on their road trip through Germany. It's entertaining enough for that. So, yeah.
That is a good sign. If you can listen to it in the car, that's always good.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, I mean, to be able to listen to it back-to-back would be really great, because originally when it came out, it was one a week. And but there's so much there that I could see that lending itself really well to a road trip. So, you know, just a little tip for the holidays.
Yeah.
Charlie, I mean, you packed a hell of a lot into the series, but are there any favorite moments that, you know, thinking back, that you like listening back to?
Well, for me, the best part is always just talking to people, whether I get to meet them in person and see where they live and what they're working on. And that's, you know, extra special when they live in a really beautiful part of the world like Tasmania.
Diving through the kelp forest is a unique experience, effectively flying through a tall tree forest, three-dimensional, not just looking up, but looking down these massive great
or
plants.
Whether I meet them online, you know, and that can be wherever they are in the world, and I get to learn about their expertise and how their brain works and how they see the world. That's the coolest thing, I think.
When we first started this business back in 1991, we had forests everywhere. You couldn't put a net through it. You couldn't drive your boat through it. You couldn't set a pot inside it. I mean, we're talking serious areas of coverage and dense. I mean, just dense forest. The last one, we call it Munro by Kelp Forest, that was the last one to disappear.
And any particular interviewee that sort of, I don't know, that you were surprised by or that you think back on?
Yeah, I was actually really quite struck by meeting Brent Finlay, the farmer who appeared in episode 2.
No vegetable matter at all. It was all gone. It was dead. It was dead as animals, kangaroos, had walked on it. It turned to powder.
And just because he was such a, just a bloke, a rugged farmer bloke, and he was also really caring, and he was, you know, full of empathy, and he really cared about all of the animals and the plants and the land that he owned and worked on.
Through the grass, and you could see everywhere where the kangaroo had landed, there was bare dirt because the grass had actually completely disintegrated, had fractured into powder. So our ecosystem, it didn't decline, it just collapsed.
And he was also really just practical in terms of how he met these challenges of climate change and whether or not to put renewables on his property. So, yeah, I just found his whole story and his whole personality and openness and willingness to talk to me. Really cool. Really interesting.
Charlie, are there any updates on the story? Have there been any developments?
I mean, in terms of people who featured in the series, I think, you know, they're just plodding along. We haven't really gotten any notable updates from them. But I suppose in terms of the point that we were making with the series, since it's been published, I think it's just becoming clearer and clearer that the costs of climate change are enormous. You know, if we think about the recent example of Hurricane Melissa in Jamaica, I just read that the cost of that one disaster is estimated to be around $8.8 billion, which is about 40% of the country's GDP. So that's going to be really hard for them to recover from. And meanwhile, as we covered in episode 2 of this series, the costs of renewable tech, of clean technology, is continuing on this downward trend.
Is that something, I mean, I'm also wondering, you know, just as a final question, is there something that, an aspect of our story or angle that didn't make it into the series that you would have liked to have included more of, or that you might follow up on in future?
Yeah, we did get some feedback about somebody who asked why we didn't cover animal agriculture, the costs of animal agriculture in the series. And we couldn't cover everything. You know, we had a limited amount of time to work with. But I think that is something that, we'd like to cover that aspect going forward as well.
Okay, so we can put that on the list for 2026 then.
Yeah. We also got an email from someone saying that they really liked the episode, the fifth episode, What the Economy Gets Wrong About Nature. Mm. But they'd be really interested in us covering an episode on what the ideal economic system would be to support the natural systems that people depend on. You know, what the ideal capitalist system would be, they asked. So can also add that one to the list.
That sounds like a tall order.
Work that out for us.
Jeez, wouldn't that be a bit of an oxymoron? I mean, yeah, well, clearly a lot of questions already come up just hearing that topic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay. Well, we'll keep our listeners posted on that. In the meantime, Charlie, thanks for joining us and taking the time. And I hope you have a very happy new year.
You too. And to everyone out there listening, thank you so much.
Join us next week for a special quiz edition of Living Planet to get your 2026 off to a good start. This is the first time we're doing it, and we're all very excited about it. That's all we have for this week's show, and for this year, for that matter. This episode of Living Planet was produced by Kathleen Schuster and me, Neil King. Special thanks to Jonas Meyer and Charlie Shield for joining us in the studio, and our sound engineers, who were Gert Georgi and Bodo Hartvig. What did you think of this episode? We'd love to hear from you. Do send us a voice message to speakpipe/livingplanet, or you can write us an email at livingplanet@dw.com, or you can leave us a comment in the comment section on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And 5 stars, please, while you're at it. Thanks for listening, and a happy new year from the Living Planet team.